Hi, I'm Lori Jones, President and CEO of Avasec Communications and host of the Integrate and Ignite Marketing Podcast. Join me and my guests, some of the world's top innovators, disruptors, and visionaries, as we explore bold and brave marketing strategies for scaling and growing your brand. In today's episode, we have the incredible Tiffany Bova joining us. Tiffany is a global growth evangelist at Salesforce and an expert in sales transformation and go-to-market model innovation. She is also the author of two insightful books, Growth IQ and The Experience Mindset. Tiffany shares some fascinating insights about the impact of technology, processes, training, and culture on both employee and customer experiences. She'll dive into case studies and examples, including the unconventional success of Airbnb and how the company prioritizes employee and host satisfaction. This episode is jam-packed with valuable insights and practical advice for marketers looking to enhance both their customer and employee experiences. So without further ado, let's dive into this enlightening conversation with Tiffany Bova. Welcome to the Integrate and Ignite podcast. I'm so excited to have Tiffany Bova back for a second time. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Lori. I'm thrilled to be here.
I tell you, you know what, you always have such incredible insights regarding team alignment as it all relates back to communication and sales and just all these incredible, incredible topics that you bring to the market through not only your voice and, you know, speaking engagements, but now you've got a new book that has just published as well. Tell us some more about your journey, how you came to the realization that this message was important to the marketplace.
Sure. You know, it's pretty quick, but I was a practicing sales, marketing, and customer service leader. So I think some of those insights come from actually having done a lot of what I talk about and sometimes not doing it very well. And then over time, learning how to do it better.
And then there's always that, hindsight's 20/20.
Absolutely. The lenses are clear.
Yeah.
And then I spent a decade at Gartner Group as a research fellow covering sales transformation, go-to-market model innovation, like indirect channel strategies. That gave me sort of 4,000 touch points with customers around the globe of all size organizations, which also gave me a different perspective, but definitely a front row seat in being able to understand what businesses were grappling with. And now I've been 7.5 years, as you mentioned, at Salesforce, and they were kind enough to ask me to come to Salesforce, continue doing what I had been doing, and do it for us and our clients. And because I don't have a practicing role every day, you know, right, where I'm managing people and revenue, I'm not in sales or marketing or customer service, I can really spend time with clients understanding what are the challenges as well, what best practices are out there, and also what pitfalls people have learned, and how can I take those and really share it in a way that is more scalable than a one-on-one conversation, right? Yeah. So I wrote my first book in 2018 called Growth IQ. It was 10 paths to growth. And I thought, you know what? I nailed it. Like I could defend.
You sure did.
I thought I did, right? And I could defend the fact that, look, through all those conversations and actually doing the job, I feel like I had captured a lot of the growth paths, which, by the way, were really nothing new. What I did was I modernized them using social, mobile, cloud, big data, AI, all the things we now have at our fingertips that we didn't have when a lot of these go-to-market strategies were invented sort of in the late 1800s, but usually in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And my very first chapter was customer experience. And I was like, look, you know, live and die on the hill. If you know, if the customer's your true north, if you're on this side of the hemisphere, you know, it's like everything should be customer centricity.
Right.
And lo and behold, I only mentioned employees in sort of the 60,000 words of that book. Maybe 100 times, 150 times, maybe like word wise, right? So very insignificant. And so joining Salesforce really showed me it was a huge miss for me.
Right.
And I had not paid enough attention to the keepers of the brand promises that are made every day, which are the employees.
The employees.
Sent me down this two-year journey. And lo and behold, my second book, The Experience Mindset, came out in June.
Yeah.
Really the 11th path.
Yeah. And to me, it makes so much sense. I mean, we're going to talk really about the importance of customer experience versus employee experience. And, you know, it's so interesting at, you know, at a very rudimentary level, when we're developing a communications plan or a brand new brand for a company, and we're typically in charge of launch as well. The last, I mean, we've of course included employees, you know, along the journey and, you know, keep them excited and so on and so forth. But the last thing we do is align them. We make sure that they understand, you know, the communication protocol, the ins and outs of the brand and how it differentiates itself from the competition and all these components that relate back to brand. But then we just kind of leave it at that and hope that they retain what we've talked to them about. And it's really that misalignment that that opportunity to really, you know, make that far, far, far more important that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. And I would say I'm going to challenge just one little thing you said, and on purpose, because like the name of the book is Experience Mindset. Mm-hmm. And my whole goal is here is to shift mindsets just a little bit.
Right.
And so it isn't customer versus employee. And I'm going to hone in on the word versus.
Right.
Mindset shift is it's customer and employee.
Yeah. Very important.
And that requires us to, instead of saying, I'm going to do this for this group versus that for that group, that it's never an or, it is always an and. And that is the shift. That is the shift of that mindset. I hope people take away from the book.
And that's why I think I just think this book is so incredibly important. And I love the and, like, we should never be saying versus or but too, like, take but out of your conversation, you know, out of your language. So I love this. Why do employees get left behind or pushed aside, or there's not enough focus on the impact that they can have on this very important topic?
So I want to believe, I hope this is the truth, right? It was an unintended consequence, meaning over the last, you know, I'm just going to talk about sort of the time I have been doing what I've been doing. I've been in and around tech now for almost 30 years, that we have spent billions of dollars on reducing effort for customer in their interactions with us, buying from us, getting service from us, getting information from us, right? Pre-internet, it was very different. Early in the internet, it was 10 clicks to buy something. Today, it's voice-enabled, one click. You know, it's much easier. You want service, maybe it was a phone call, or back in the day, it was a fax. You know, now it can be that you go online, start chatting very quickly with a bot until it gets to a point where the AI says, okay, now this is something I'm going to forward to an employee, to a person, because it's gotten out of that basic FAQ that I can answer, that we've tried to really streamline, remove friction. We've journey mapped for customers. We've done all these things, but the unintended consequence of that effort the sort of spend and focus to reduce the effort for the customer in order to improve their experience with us has pushed that effort to the employee.
Right.
So the question, would we ever ask our customer to go to one website, one tab on their phone, you know, desktop or, you know, iPad, something like that, one tab to find out information, one tab to buy, one tab to enter credit card information, one tab to enter shipping information, and then one tab to track the shipment? Would we ever do that to customers? Now, you might, but you wouldn't keep your job, nor would the company grow.
Nor the customer.
Right? Yeah. Where would you keep the customer? So why in the world do we do that to our employees?
Right.
Right? That we require our employees to hop between multiple applications. Now, look, it's not lost on me. I work at Salesforce. Like, I understand, you know, but there are reasons why the things we say as a company is really about this, right? It's the single source of truth, you know, breaking down the silos, having consistent and clean data. That is really about employees being not only more productive and effective, but being able to do their job and serve customers
right
in a way that customers want to be served. Personalized, predictive, all the buzz terms we use isn't for a PowerPoint presentation. It is really about helping employees help customers be more successful.
And what that all relates to is the magnification of growth. And one of the research studies that you conducted, it showed that this focus on the employee can increase revenue and profits by more than 50%. That's a big number. So break it down for us. You know, so our audience, as you know, is very, very broad. We've got early stage CEOs who might have five people working for them. We've got later stage companies who are starting to really, develop departments within the organization, and they might have 50. And then we've got these later stage companies that might be at 500. You know, most of them marketers, innovators, you know, disruptors, people who really want to be able to make an impact. They talk about culture. You know, they talk about the importance of that, but they're really not talking about employee experience.
Right. So what we found, so there was three research projects. The first one we did was really a result of a comment I made on stage. I said, I didn't think it was a coincidence. Salesforce is a great place to work, according to, you know, external lists. One of the most innovative companies in the world and the fastest growing enterprise software company. I didn't think it was a coincidence. Happy employee, happy customer, get that right, greater growth rate.
Right.
And also, by a long mile, not the first person to ever say it. That's for sure. But could we prove it? Could we prove the connection? Now, in full transparency, I'm not a people expert or a culture expert. It's really not my lane. I really talk about growth, sales, marketing, customer success, you know, at the moment that matters when a customer touches a company in some way, either online, offline, with a product or with a human, right?
Right.
So I don't, while important, comp, equity, inclusion, all super important, not really the focus of my book. There's lots of research and books out there about it. This is not that.
Which makes me so much more excited about this topic as well, right? I mean, it's that important to affect top line revenue that you had that epiphany, you know, 2 years ago on stage that was like, I've got to bring this to market.
Well, so I said, let's go prove it. So we did the first one for US, it was in the US. We did it with Forbes Insight. It was publicly traded companies because we could get our hands on publicly available information.
That's just got off the phone with them, by the way.
Yeah, great, great.
That's
org.
Hysterical. Oh yeah.
Great org, doing some great work. And then we interviewed about 300 or so C-suite executives to really kind of round out what we found from the research. And what we found from the research was companies that were doing very well on employee experience through employee scores that we could get our hands on, right? Glassdoor ratings or ENPS scores or attrition rates or whatever it might be, and customer experience. So we could get it from net promoter score, those kinds of things, customer acquisition costs, churn rates, et cetera. We saw that brands that did both and did both well had a 1.8 times faster growth rate than those that didn't.
Wow.
So for a billion-dollar brand, it was a $40 million impact. Now I realize 95, 96, 97% of companies are nowhere near that size, but you can do the math if you're a $1, $3, $5, $10 million company or $100 million company, improving the growth rate. Now the CAGR at that, or the compounded annual growth rate on that, was in the low 8% range. Those that didn't get it right were in the 4% range. So it's not like you're negatively growing or you're not growing. You're just not growing as fast.
And that is ultimately when companies can catapult the competition as well. So that fast growth rate is very important, especially in tech.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd say that we remember the experience we have with a company much longer than the price that we've paid.
Right.
And so, you know, unfortunately, companies tend to be product-led. Like our product will sell itself. It's the best in the market. But if the experience is bad, it doesn't matter, right? If you went to a really amazing restaurant with incredible food and the service was terrible, would you go back?
Right.
And most people would say no. So in our consumer lives, we make that decision unconsciously every day about that experience and we relate it to the company. And so we do the same thing in our business lives. But that triggered us to do a second study. And that second study was with the Edelman Group. It was global. And that's where we really honed in on what are the elements and attributes of a good employee experience that have the greatest impact on customer experience. What was it? Trust, C-suite accountability, recognition, seamless tech. And so seamless tech, as an example, was the greatest disconnect between the C-suite and
really
it was the greatest. So
why is that?
So I think I have a theory, but 52% of the C-suite believe that the technology they provide is working effectively and efficiently. That means 48% don't believe it is, which shocking in and of itself.
And I would say because they just don't know, or because they're not being told, which is they don't know, but why is that?
So hold that thought. So if 52% of the C-suite believe that, 32% of employees believe that the technology they're provided works efficiently and effectively. So already we have a 20-point gap.
Yeah. Okay?
Already a 20-point gap. But wait for it. Customer-facing employees, only 20% of customer-facing employees believe that the technology they're provided allows them to collaborate easily, makes them more productive, more efficient, and more effective.
Which is a great case for, you know, companies like Salesforce, quite frankly.
Right. Yeah. That wasn't the point of it.
And it wasn't, but still.
But it tells the story, right? And so I would say, why is that? I have a theory. The C-suite and a customer-facing employee. How often does the C-suite actually use the technology that the frontline employee uses?
That's
so
right.
How often do they log into the CRM to actually look at what's happening in an account? How often do they log into the service ticketing system to see what tickets are open and how long are tickets sitting? And or, to your point, are they getting a roll-up where someone is telling them in a single slide dashboard, here's what's happening in the business pipeline is, here's our forecast, here's the call center volume. They're not in it. So when you're not in it and you're not using it, right?
You don't know.
You don't know.
There's no understanding.
There's no understanding, or people are telling you, and because you've spent a lot of money on tech, you go, oh, like I've spent all this money on tech. I just can't get caught up in that. So, you know, there is the biggest disconnect, but underneath that is broken processes, siloed and data, access to data. Then it gets into things like career development and coaching. I don't know how to do something. I'm not trained on how to do something. So once again, at that intersection, when a customer and an employee touch in some way, you want your employees to show up with, you know, the best that they can. And so that started to solidify for us. Okay, now we're starting to understand those elements.
Right.
And then triggered the third study, which is the one.
Let's stay on that for 1 second, if we can.
Sure.
What effect does just tech, I mean, communication process, you know, feedback, the feedback loop, you know, pay, time off, you know, all those sort of things, you know, ladder up on some level. But I'm interested to know how the tech impacts client retention and client upsell and employee retention and employee additional opportunities to stay with the company.
So I'll give you an example. There was a client that I was working with in Toronto a number of months back. And I was just, you know, having a dinner with the client, and we were just talking about the research, and I was talking about seamless tech and processes. We're very similar to what you and I are discussing right now. And they looked at me and said, well, let me give you an example, Tiffany. I said, love that, right? It takes us about 20 minutes for a customer service agent in our call center to facilitate a return for our customers.
Hmm.
20 minutes
for
a return. So then you go, okay, like, can you imagine being that call center representative and you're, you know, training or driving or walking or biking to work every day going, I can't wait to do 10 returns today, right? Because it will just eat up my whole day.
Like, right.
That's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to listen to a customer complaining. They have to sit on the phone with me. I'm going to have to jump between 8 applications. I got to go get 2 approvals. It's mundane, monotonous, repetitive work. Driving, no joy for me, not requiring any critical thinking. You know, I'm adding very little value. I'm just doing all the things that the system was never designed to do. And I'm picking up all the pieces.
Right.
And so Now the customer has had a 20-minute return call.
Lag time is how they're going to look at it.
You know, not a good use of their time. They're going to say, "Ugh, doing business with this particular brand is just such a hassle, especially if I have to do a return, right? Ugh, I'd rather just keep it than return it because I just don't want to waste 20 minutes. And you know, that's on a good day. Sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter, kind of a thing. And then the employee is just burnt out, right? Because I have to switch between all the applications, like I said, right? You know, would you ever do this to employees? Well, clearly we do, because the enterprise has an average of 1,061 unique applications.
Wow.
That's an enterprise. Right?
Yeah.
So a small business is going to have smaller, but take the percentage that I'm about to give you, and only 27% of them are integrated.
Rah.
So who bears the brunt of that lack of integration?
Like yeah, the individual. Employee. Yeah.
So now let's go back. Am I super excited about work or am I sort of quiet quitting, right? I'm here because I need the paycheck. It's drudgery work. It's not that exciting. I'm not learning anything. I'm not sort of expanding my mindset. I'm just mindlessly clicking and poking and going and standing up and getting approvals. And then, you know, as a customer, so going back to your question, what is the impact of tech? That's a combination of tech and process and training and people, right? So inexperienced mindset, I hit all four: people, process, tech, and then culture. Because culture sets the tone for those decisions that or customer or employee, right? That's the cultural tone instead of an and. And so, you know, I can rattle off where we've seen AI really improve productivity and the bottom line. And, but, you know, at its highest level, I think we have to just nail the basics that if you're listening to this and you agree with it, if you agree with the assumption there's room for improvement in these things to give time back and make employees more efficient and effective to hit on the promises you have for customers, then start there, right? And so I think that we can lean into the third study that shows that up to 50% number you rattled off.
You know, I know we're going to talk about that third study really quick. Do you have a good understanding of the number of entities out there that are under budgeted when it comes to tech?
No, I don't. I don't have it. Yeah. I might have had it when I was back in my Gartner days. I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
If
so many individuals are impacted by the lack of sophistication, you know, surrounding their tech stack, then you got to believe that it's across the board pretty well underfunded.
Well, we found in research during the pandemic, I think it was sort of like month 8 or 9 of lockdown in the US, that some, I think it was in a obscene amount. It was a little north of 50%.
Wow.
Small businesses got online for the very first time during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so weren't even online.
Yeah. And well, Zoom. We had been on Zoom for years because of this podcast, taping it, but most companies didn't even have an external communication tool, such as video conferencing, that would allow everyone to work remotely.
There's a great example, but like if you just think a restaurant and didn't have a website because they have a storefront.
Right.
So they didn't have a website that had their menu on it or their hours on it, or you could order and pick up. Or they weren't even connected to an Uber Eats or Grubhub or whatever, no delivery. They just figured, you know, I'd always be open and my regulars would come. And then all of a sudden, boom, overnight, nothing. And so they had to very quickly, right, stand it up, put up their menu, put up their hours, do a relationship with a Grubhub or a Uber Eats, you know, for delivery. But then lo and behold, they had no customer information. So I ate there every Thursday with my family. I always had the waiters, just waitresses, everyone
waited to see her through the window. Yeah.
But now no one knew how to send me a note and say, "Hey, it's Thursday. I know you've booked every Thursday for the last 4 months. We'd love for you to order your dinner for your family on Thursday." They had none of that.
Right.
So to your point, that lack of investment is, I don't need it. It won't help me. It'll overcomplicate my business, or I'm not that sophisticated, or it's not that complex. And while all true statements, when you get in the smaller size organization, those kinds of decisions can be extremely impactful, positive or negative for you, right? Too much, too complicated, too expensive, too light, not enough, haven't spent enough. it is a fine balance that I can't say this is the percent of your revenue you should spend on tech, because it depends what industry, what size, what
region. It really does.
It's just asterisks, right? Too many things, variables go into that. But I'd say if at a minimum, right, you cannot run in total analog. And even when I talk to companies like, let's just say like a mining company, and you start talking about something like employee experience and customer experience, who's the customer?
Yeah.
A mining company. Let's say they're mining for gold. Who's the customer in that? It's not a buyer at, you know, Zales Jewelry or, you know, whomever. It isn't, right? Because that's not who they're dealing with. They're dealing with gold brokers, right? And then who's the employee? Is it the person working in the mine?
In the mine.
For gold every day? Yeah. And now I'm talking about psychological safety and trust. And they're like, okay, well, hold on a second, right? Like, how does that apply to a miner? And I'd be like, well, and I don't mean a young person. I mean a person in a mine.
Right.
You know, it could be, do they feel that I don't feel safe in the job in the mine? And I raise my hand and I say, I don't think this equipment is safe for us. That would be a form of psychological safety, but they're not walking around with all this technology. They might have, and I say, well, but they do, right? They're looking for the gold. They're using technology to find it, right? They're not just digging aimlessly. So sometimes that's a little harder when industries are so maybe physical labor oriented,
right?
But it's hard to be completely analog today. And then there are many that are completely digital that only have a handful of employees, yet they're billion-dollar brands. You also couldn't do that without having technology.
I love your example. Interestingly, we had an IT infrastructure company, their main, as a client, and their main target market is mining. So, you know, it's like the discussions are happening, you know, 20 years later than they should have been. But nonetheless, we regress. Let's go ahead and talk about really what led to that third study.
So the third study was really a way for us to be able to, in a defensible way from academia, prove causation or direct correlation. Hmm. We stayed in the Salesforce research, we stayed away from those words for lots of reasons. But in that study, what was done was they took a US-based retailer that had more than 1,000 retail storefronts in the US. There's a handful of brands that have that. I don't know who it is, but there's only a handful of it that it could be, right? That
has 1,000 retail stores, right?
And then what they did was they wanted to look at employee aspects and elements, things like part-time, full-time, tenure of employees, training, onboarding, tools, systems, processes, right? The things that they could look at from an employee standpoint. And they started to find signals, if you will. When a store has more part-time employees, we see the sales are lower. When they have a more higher level, right? It is higher because they are more committed, right? Part-time might be, it's part-time. I work 2 days a week. It's a paycheck for me. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? But it's a different attitude of I'm here 5 days a week. I know everybody I work with. I've been working here for years. You know, I'm moving up in the organization. I'm more committed, those kinds of things. And so they started to see the differences between it and did a regression analysis to uncover what aspects of the tenure and tools and systems and training would actually deliver better results. And so when they found high performing teams, right, and high performing stores, they removed things that might be like it's holiday season or back to school, right, which would spike sales, you know, in a event versus having a steady state kind of business. And then they found that those that were performing higher on the elements of employee, some of which I just mentioned, they saw up to a 50% improvement in revenue per hour, per head, per store employee.
Wow.
So it was this $47 an hour and got to sort of $80 an hour, right? And so this was not invest in more tech. This was not, you know, rearrange the store and remodel the store. This was just making sure that the employees had what they needed and that there was a right mix of who was leading, who was working, how do we move some of those things. And so a very specific study could show us that connection between the employee and revenue.
Was this study conducted pre-COVID or post-COVID?
It was pre.
Yeah. Pre. It'd be so interesting to see how this great recession and this post-COVID mindset regarding, employee retention, the lack of employees has affected some of those findings.
You mean the Great Resignation?
Great Resignation, yeah, yes.
Yeah. So I would say that the great, and I didn't, and in the book, I do this as well. I don't like the term the Great Resignation because it's like people are just resigning to, And I called it the Great Reflection because I think people reflect.
I think that's great.
You know, what is it I'm doing? Why am I doing it? Where am I doing it? Who am I doing it for? And do I want to keep doing that? I think it was a reflective thing versus just resigning to it all. But that's me.
But I think what you've just said, there's a lot of meaning behind it. Which is why this topic is so important to you as well, because it is exactly what you're talking about. It's, a reflection on what they've been doing, and they're asking themselves why they've been doing it and just saying, you know what, there might be a better way for me.
Might be a better way for me. And so I think that the great reflection and quiet quitting is an absolute manifestation of the lack of investments made on employee over the last multiple decades.
Right. They've just had it.
It just cracked open that I'm just like, you are burning me out like that, 20 minute call, right? I am just wading through broken processes and systems. I keep telling people no one cares. And if you don't care, why do I care?
Right.
If you don't care to fix it, why do I care to tell you? And so now I'm just going to collect a paycheck, the quiet quitting, or I'm out. I'm just going to start my own business, or I'm going to go do something else, whatever it might be. And so I think that, and through the research, we found this as well, that unfortunately, nobody owned employee experience. One, two, even though companies were collecting employee data, they did not know what to do with it and action it, which meant nothing was happening with that data. And the third, that even though executives globally pretty much said, look, I care about my employees. I take it as a personal responsibility and remit for me to make sure my people are happy and engaged. In the end, unfortunately, it's focused on the customer above all else.
Yeah.
So it's this sort of tension of that or conversation, right? That we started this out with instead of looking at it as an and.
Who should own customer or employee experience?
Yeah. When I started to share the research, it was still during the pandemic. I did about 100 roundtables with 8 to 10 executives.
I love that.
Around the world. And when I was sharing the data, I heard these three things. If it's so obvious, why isn't everyone doing it? Like, again, this is nothing new. Like, it is intellectually obvious. If your employees aren't happy,
yeah,
your customers probably aren't happy either. Right. And so And I wasn't the first to say it. So if it's so obvious, so then I would come back and go, I don't disagree. It's really obvious, but let me just give you a couple stats, sort of what I just, mentioned. No one's owning it. No one's looking at the data. I gave some of the stats around tech disconnects between employees and, career advancement and some of the big nuggets from it. And they, you could see them sit back and go like, while obvious, I wonder if we're not doing it either. The
right.
Second I heard was who owns it? And so I would say this, that is a very expert fixed mindset question, because who owns it means what you want to do is stand up a new group division, put a head on it, have metrics on it, and create another new siloed group, which is exactly why I called it experience mindset. It isn't about a new role. It isn't about a new group. It is literally about everybody saying, when we do something for the customer as a company, what are the unintended or intended consequences to our employees? If I can get you right to pause when you do something for customer and ask the employee question, then I have been successful, because the answer to that question may just pivot or shift what you do for customer ever so slightly, but that slight move has such great impact and effect on your employees. It's worth it.
It really does. And, as you're, explaining all this, I'm sure many of our listeners are having, blankety blank moments, thinking to themselves, we can be doing something much, much better here. Do you have any case studies of companies that have really tried to shift the mindset and are achieving, record breakthroughs in revenue or retention, whatever it might be, the impact that you hope to achieve?
Yeah. So as with Growth IQ, what I did in the first book was I had 30 case studies, literally 10 growth paths. Each growth path had two positive use cases of that growth path and one cautionary tale. It is impossible for me to do a, you know, from cradle to grave of a company. So I grabbed a point in time where they made a decision to launch a new product or go into a new market or focus on customer or, you know, improve their sales process, like, you know, one of those paths.
Right.
So I couldn't do the totality of a company. So I would pick points in time. And I tried to replicate that in experience mindset, points in time, because I don't ever want people to think that company A read my book, implemented the experience mindset, and then went, right? Because the book wasn't out. So I would find best practices that resembled that experience mindset and call those out for a point in time again. And so there's an entire chapter on just experience mindset. And the company that I use as an example was Airbnb. And what was interesting about using Airbnb is many of their quote unquote employees are not employees at all.
Right.
They're hosts, right? They are hosts that are part of their network. So are those hosts employees? Well, not in the classic term, right? They're not on Airbnb's payroll, but they make money from Airbnb and they have a huge influence over the success of the company, yet not employees. So influencing them or your Uber drivers, right? Or anybody who's in the gig economy, right? In that sort of ecosystem, that is the greater stakeholders that are those people that are representing your brand.
Right.
You could say even State Farm Insurance. They might be agents.
Those independent. Farm. Yeah.
Independent, right? Or financial advisors. Or, I mean, there's examples, you know, all over where they are an extension of, but not an employee of, still very important to the success. But what Airbnb did was they had something in place that was called their control center, which I sort of renamed in the book an employee advisory board. And that EAB would be, they stood it up. And by the way, they didn't call the HR department HR. They actually called it employee experience. And the head of HR was actually the head of employee experience. And they had this very holistic view of like, it's not just the people who work here. It's our hosts, right? It's the cleaning crews that we employ, right? In order to clean our hosts' environments. It's the tools, it's the apps, it's everything we do for that away from home experience. That, you know, grows our brand, right? And grows the company. That whole story was the culmination of really creating that kind of flywheel of super happy employees, super happy hosts. You get very happy customers. When they went public, they got people around the world who were hosts to ring their doorbell at the time that they were ringing the bell on the New York Stock Exchange.
That is so cool.
What a great story, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the way to do that
because they included them.
They include them. They include them in decisions about the applications they develop, you know, what was happening. And just recently, right, the CEO of Airbnb again was like, look, we lost our way a little bit. We went back to our hosts and we heard you. We heard actual people who were clients who were staying, what they didn't like, what they liked, what hosts liked and didn't like. And he put out in public sort of the 10-point plan of what they were going to do to fix it. Full transparency, asking, answering. It's a great continuation. I didn't include that in the book because it had just happened, obviously.
Yeah,
but that's a continuation of having that mindset always, even if you get off track.
Yeah. And that is it. I mean, that's that continuity piece that's important. Did you find, you know, you mentioned those points in time. Did you find that a particular point in time was more difficult to, you know, maintain that employee experience and engagement, such as a product launch or, you know, product development leading up to a product launch, employees were less satisfied given particular points in time?
So this is a Gartner stat and I'm doing it from memory. So hopefully I don't do it as a disservice, but back in 2000, I think it was like 18, there was like an average of like 6 enterprise change requirements coming at employees. And the willingness to do that was in like the 70% range.
Right.
In 2022, there was 22
wow.
enterprise change efforts underway. And the employee willingness had plummeted to in the 30% range.
Yeah.
So employees are burnt, right? They're just burnt. They're burnt on a lot of change. You know, they're burnt on a lot of things coming at them and greater expectations and, you know, sort of this over pivot to customer and I'm sort of left behind. Like, you know, we can have 2-hour delivery, right? Check mm-hmm. the box. Is customer expectation being met? Check. Is my experience good? Cause I ordered it, showed up in 2 hours, check. But yet the driver who delivers that is sitting in 105 degree temperature with no air conditioning in the delivery van.
Right. Right.
Not a great employee experience. Right.
Yeah.
And hence why, right. You see in many of these very customer centric organizations having problems right now with their employees, you know, a Starbucks or an Amazon or a, right. You've got unionization. You've got, well, we're all really happy with streaming. I'm in the Southern California area right now. I'm in the thick of, you know, the Hollywood area, and we've got the SAG strike and the Writers Guild strike happening because, you know, we're happy as customers with streaming, right? But are the people who actually do the work happy? Not so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a unwillingness that's just that sort of speed. So I would say to you that, it isn't so much about that point in time of like maybe products, but a lot of change, like in a big change.
The motion. Amount of change happening.
Yeah, in a change motion. Now, if you are a startup, a very small company, and you have like, you know, less than 15 or 20 employees, which is the majority of, you know, businesses across the world, how can you pay attention to this and then affect change if you are a singular leader, right?
Right.
And you're playing many, many roles. And maybe some of that is outsourced, like your HR person is an outsourced or your IT is outsourced. That if you make a decision to really look at this and fix it, it will become the platform for your culture. You can attract, retain, maintain, motivate talented people. That's what you want to have happen. Mm-hmm. And if that's happening, you grow. And if those two things are happening, your revenue goes up and your profitability
all works together.
What happens? You can hire more people and you become a 30 and 40 person company. When you're smaller, you can fix these things more quickly. As you get
larger, which is opportunity.
As you get larger, it's more complicated. And if you really are a, you know, an enterprise size organization, you sort of hear this and go, whoa, like this is a 2-year multi-million dollar big,
you know, hire a change management group, you know, yeah.
And hire a consultant and do all this work. And I would say start small, start with a team, a division, a warehouse, you know, a region, you know, a product launch group, like make it something that you can actually like that experiment, right? In the retailer, it wasn't, we looked at every store. We grabbed a handful that were representative so we could find the behaviors that we could then identify that people could shift. So you could do that. The larger the company, the bigger the spider web. The
right.
more broken the process is, the more complex the tech stack, the more lack of integration. If you're a small business, you might have one tool. Ah, that's easier, right?
The start.
So you got to start somewhere.
They always say the hardest point in time is recognizing that the change needs to take place, no matter what it is that we're talking about. So with that in mind, let's assume that the CEO or the, you know, VP of HR has recognized that something needs to be fixed. What is the next best step for them?
So I'm going to tell a personal story on this. Mm-hmm. In my last leadership role, I was running a division of a Fortune 500 company, and I knew that we could be doing something better. So I was sitting in front of the executive team, and this was back in 2005. So it was a little bit ago, but forever changed my career. Actually, this situation changed my career. I was emotionally fighting this fight. Like, it is the right thing to do. Like, it's better for, you know, I was passionately trying to convince and persuade this executive team of a Fortune 500 company that there was a better way to do it. Now, I don't know why. You know, no. At the time, I didn't know why no. You know, was it because they didn't trust my opinion? Was it because I wasn't, you know, they didn't think I had enough experience? I don't know the reason.
Right.
I don't know the reason. You know, is it because I was a woman? Because back then in tech, I was one of a handful. I don't think it was that. But whatever.
Nonetheless, whatever the reason,
we brought in a consulting firm, A.T. Kearney, actually, ATK, and we did a project. And lo and behold, it proved out what I was saying was in fact valid. But now it showed up with assumptions and numbers and ROI and a workbook sort of spread, you know, spreadsheet that we could plug in these assumptions and how many people equated to this and that. And, you know, the executives agreed to the assumptions. We plugged them all in and lo and behold, it got us to a number and the executives now were fully on board. So the lesson for me was I was not going to win fighting it emotionally. I had to
back it up
to the minds of those executives and really show up with some kind of framework, which mm-hmm. would allow them to not only understand, but agree to assumptions and definitions of things. Like, what is your definition of employee experience? What is your good? What is your definition of good customer experience? Mm-hmm. What are our chosen KPIs? What does good look like KPIs? What does bad look like KPIs? Who's responsible for those KPIs? I mean, you know, you kind of have to step through the exercise. And coming out the other side, then what also happened was, back to my story, was they wanted me to cut my headcount by a third. And so I was like, you know, okay, right? But they wanted a third and they wanted the same revenue numbers. And so when I did it in the spreadsheet that you're going to get rid of, you know, 40 people who work for me, it changed the numbers significantly on what I'd be able to deliver. And they'd say, no, you still have to deliver that. And so then I'd go, well, hold on. So then all the assumptions we've agreed to and been working under for the last 6 months are no longer true, right? And they were like, well, you still have to deliver that. So I said, okay. So day two of a quarter for a publicly traded company, I walked into the executive meeting, right, to do my, you know, quarter review. And I said, I stood up, it was my turn. And I said, I'm here to let you all know we are going to miss our number this quarter.
Right.
They're like, well, it's day two of the quarter. And I go, it doesn't matter if it's day one, two.
Yeah, good for you.
I'm like, it ain't happening. It's not happening because, and I put it up and we agreed to these assumptions. When I plug this in, here's the numbers. And now you're telling me that you want those numbers. So I don't know how we can get 130% capacity out of people when, you know, sort of 85 is best in class. We don't even get 100, right? And you want sort of 130.
Anyway. 55% more out of individuals? There's no way.
So long story short, that was the last time, you know, that it just wasn't a fit, right? And that was the last time I ever managed people. I haven't been a people manager since then. And so it's been, you know, almost 17 years. And because I was just burnt, right? I was just burnt and I felt like, you know, I needed to change what I was doing. But ultimately that lesson has stood the test of time for me. So my advice would be, how are you defining it in the company, ENCX?
Right.
What KPIs are being tracked today across both of those? Which ones of those KPIs are actually tied to compensation for anybody, especially the executives? Start there and understand what you're already tracking. Then I'd go to, what surveys have you done for customers? And what have you done for employees? How frequently? Do you have a customer advisory board? Probably. Have you journey mapped your customers? Journey in buying or service or whatever? Probably. Have you done the same for employees? Probably not. So you'll start to uncover where there's easy
gaps.
Things that you can start with. Once you get through those basics, you should then have some assumptions and sort of a working plan of where you can begin to make these adjustments. And consistently, in a transparent and vulnerable way, you have to revisit it often and frequent and make sure that you don't get off track, right? Because you start to get comfortable and complacent when you've got it all checked off, right? And everyone's like, great, that's done. Let's move on. Employee experience and customer experience is never done. And you never want to move on.
I love that. Yeah, and I'm going to go out on a limb here just for a second and mention something that I think has a lot of relevancy right now. You know, we as marketers know that the average person needs to interact with a brand 26 times to make a buying decision. And, you know, retaining that customer is not as many interactions, but it's certainly at least half with good, you know, feedback, ongoing education, whatever it might be. We don't equate any of that sort of stuff when it comes to employee retention. What is it? And put a number to it. Make it 26 times, but put a number to it. What is it that you are doing to keep your employees, to keep them happy, to get them talking about your brand to other people when you've got, you know, a big hiring need? You know, all those sort of things really help retain. It creates better customer experience, as you've talked about, and it highlights the importance of the people that do the job day in and day out.
Absolutely. If you do net promoter score, you could always do employee net promoter score,
right?
Which is a way for you to understand that specific topic that you're, you know, question or category that you just described. But what I would say there is it could give you a false positive. Yeah, I'd recommend it, right? But how about you ask one question at the end of every ticket that's closed in your call center for a service request, and you ask them, how hard was it on a scale of 1 to 5 for you to close that ticket?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you see 2s pretty across the board. Right. And so, you know, if it's hard, why is it hard? So now you have a starting point. So now can I work to make it easier to close that ticket? Is it integrating tools? Is it access to data? Is it giving them the authority to approve certain dollar amounts on returns? Like, what is it to make it easier? And you see it go to 3 to 4. Do you see net promoter score or customer satisfaction
increase,
score
right.
increase during that time? Can you connect the two, right? To see when one goes down, is one the other going down? When one goes up, does one get worse or better? I mean, those are the kinds of questions. Once again, this isn't an or, this isn't a versus. This is a understanding the connection between the two more than just it being obvious and logical. And
we could talk, we're running late. We could talk for another hour, I think, before we sign off today, I've got this question. How does hiring come into play here? Because you definitely do want the right people in the right seats. How can you take employee experience and develop some KPIs for hiring the right people?
So I'm going to use us as an example, Salesforce. So, you know, even though, as I mentioned, we're a great place to work globally, if we're not in the number one, we're in the top five, probably pretty much around the globe. And I'd say that even, and consistently for a long time.
Right.
When I was writing the book, it was a little more than a year now, maybe 14 months ago, we stood up an employee experience team for the very first time.
Hmm.
So even a great place to work, even one of the most innovative companies in the world, and even the fastest growing software company, there are always blind spots, right? Mm-hmm. There are always, what we understood though, was during the pandemic, we'd done 2 massive M&A activities. With Slack and Tableau.
That's always hard.
We had a bunch of people coming on where no one was in the office, right? Everyone was locked down. We were onboarding a lot of new employees besides the M&A, and they weren't going through our normal onboarding process because mm-hmm. our onboarding process was in person. You know, there wasn't this sort of virtual version of it. And so we had thousands of employees that had never made it through our standard onboarding. So their effectiveness in the first 6 months, we were losing people, you know, in their first 6 months or 8 months or year, which we had never seen really at those levels before. What was different? Anyway, long story short, was it was about the hiring and onboarding.
Right.
And so the first focus on that employee experience work stream was, how do we make that more seamless, more frictionless, more friendly, more brand centric, more culturally inclusive, even if it was virtual versus, you know, in person, a hybrid version of it? How do we do that? And so you just grab a chunk, and then it may be, okay, how do we get them to get their credit cards or set up in their, you know, in their corporate phones? Or, and then there's a chunk that, okay, now how do we get them certified, you know, and trained using Trailhead? That's a chunk. Now, okay, now, you know, now it's their first review process. Like, how do we, you get mm-hmm. the point.
Yeah, so it goes,
journey mapped customers. We've split that hair, like you rattled off 26 you know, impressions. And then the other one is they're 60% through their buyer journey before they ever reach out to a salesperson. And oh, the average buying team is now 6.4 people. We can rattle those off in the marketing, sales, customer success world, like the back of our hand.
Right.
Can you say the same thing for employee?
Yeah. And that's where the need is.
Yeah.
Tiffany, I have loved our conversation today. The book is The Experience Mindset, and you can get it anywhere. And I would suggest that you do that today, that our listeners, I know I'm going to go get it. So I will read through it chapter by chapter, and I'll make sure that I follow up with any questions I have. Thank you so much for the insight, for the wisdom, which is always mind-boggling and mind-blowing when it comes to you. We really appreciate your appearance today on the Integrate and Ignite podcast.
Thank you for having me, Lori. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
This episode is complete. Head over to avasetcommunications.com for more ways to scale and grow your business. And be sure to tune in regularly for insights and motivation with host Lori Jones and her guests on the Integrate and Ignite Marketing Podcast.